Hare Krishna. So it is a great honor and privilege and pleasure for me to be in this exalted abode of Srila Prabhupada and Shishrada Gokulananda and so many other sublime personalities. Today, I will read from Sri Chaitanya Charitamrita, Antya Lila, Chapter 8. Ramachandra Puri criticizes the Lord. From the beginning, it doesn't sound like a very auspicious topic. But sometimes to understand what to do, it helps to know what not to do and what the consequences are of doing what one should not do. And in this chapter, we will find two examples. One, what not to do and the consequences of it, and the other, what to do and the benefits of that. So please repeat after me. Jaya Jaya Sri Chaitanya Jaya Nityananda.
Jaya Sri Chaitanya Jaya Nityananda.
Jaya Dvaita Chandra Jaya Gaura Bhakta Vrinda.
Jaya Dvaita Chandra Jaya Gaura Bhakta Vrinda.
Jaya Jaya Sri Chaitanya Jaya Nityananda.
Jaya Jaya Sri Chaitanya
Jaya Dvaita Chandra Jaya Gaura Bhakta Vrinda.
Jaya Dvaita Chandra Jaya Gaura Bhakta Vrinda.
Jaya Jaya Sri Chaitanya Jaya Nityananda.
Jaya Jaya Sri Chaitanya Jaya Nityananda.
Jaya Dvaita Chandra Jaya Gaura Bhakta Vrinda.
Jaya Dvaita Chandra Jaya Gaura Bhakta Vrinda.
Text 1. Tam vande Krishna Chaitanyam Ramachandra Puri Bayat Lokika Hartasvayam Yo Bhikshanam Samakochayat. Let me offer my respectful obeisances to Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, who reduced his eating due to fear of the criticism of Ramachandra Puri. So we will move along and read about Ramachandra Puri's habit. He would invite devotees of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu for prasad, and he would compel them to eat more and more. And then afterwards, he would criticize them for overeating. Actually, somehow that just reminded me of a little incident in South Africa. His Holiness Indradumya Swami. Of course, these devotees were not like Ramchandra Puri. They just wanted to feed us. But His Holiness Indradumya Swami and I went to the home of a nice couple. And the way they served the meal, we got the impression that each preparation was going to be the last. So we would sort of take our fill of that preparation, and then we found that another preparation was coming. And it was very, very difficult because we were already, we thought we were full, then another one came, and I sort of looked to His Holiness Indradumya Swami that what do we do in such a situation? And he replied, Lord Krishna says in the Bhagavad Gita, one should not eat too much or eat too little. Today we are focusing on not eating too little. So this is one example with Jagadananda Pandit. With great eagerness, Ramachandra Puri seated Jagadananda Pandit and personally served him prasad. Encouraging him again and again, Ramachandra Puri fed him sumptuously. But when Jagadananda had washed his hands and mouth, Ramachandra Puri began criticizing him. I have heard, he said, that the followers of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu eat more than necessary. Now I have directly seen that this is true. Feeding a sannyasi too much breaks his regulative principles. For when a sannyasi eats too much, his renunciation is destroyed. The characteristic of Ramachandra Puri was that first he would induce someone to eat more than necessary, and then he would criticize him. Now, Ramachandra Puri was a disciple of Srila Madhavendra Puri. Srila Madhavendra Puri was the spiritual master of Srila Ishwara Puri, whom Lord Chaitanya accepted as his spiritual master. So Ramachandra Puri was on the same level in terms of spiritual generations as Lord Chaitanya's spiritual master, and therefore he respected him externally as he respected his own spiritual master, because it's the general rule that one should honor the God brothers of one's spiritual master on the same level or in the same way as one's spiritual master. Now, how could it be that Ramachandra Puri, being the disciple of such an exalted spiritual master as Srila Madhavendra Puri, could have become so mean and offensive? So there's a history. And now we shall read that history. Text 18. Purveyabe Madhavendra Karene Antardana Ramachandra Puri Tabe Ailatanrastana. Formerly, when Madhavendra Puri was at the last stage of his life, Ramachandra Puri came to where he was staying. Madhavendra Puri was chanting the holy name of Krishna, and sometimes he would cry, "Oh, my Lord, I did not get shelter at Mathura." Then Ramachandra Puri was so foolish that he fearlessly dared to instruct his spiritual master. Quote, "If you are in full transcendental bliss," he said, "you should now remember only Brahman. Why are you crying?" Purport by Srila Prabhupada. As stated in the Bhagavad Gita, Brahma-bhuta prasanatma, a Brahman-realized person is always happy. Na sochati na kangshati, he neither laments nor aspires for anything. Not knowing why Madhavendra Puri was crying, Ramachandra Puri tried to become his advisor. Thus he committed a great offense, for a disciple should never try to instruct his spiritual master. Now, in Vedic philosophy, and in reality, there's the material realm, then there's sort of the marginal realm, and then there's the spiritual realm. So many of the instructions in the scriptures are meant for people in the material realm to help elevate them so that they can attain to the spiritual realm. But the material world is actually an inverted reflection of the spiritual world. So everything that exists in the material world, in its perverted form, exists originally in the spiritual world in its pure form. So certainly the conditioned souls in the material world are in the bodily concept of life. They are acting in that, you could say, perverted realm, where instead of accepting Krishna as the center, everyone himself or herself wants to be the center. And because of wanting to take the place of Krishna and be in the center, everyone in the material world suffers. So when the Bhagavad Gita says, na sochati na kangshati, one should not hanker or lament, it refers to material hankering and lamentation. Like everyone in the bodily concept is hankering for something material to make them happy, and lamenting if they lose something that they thought would make them happy, or don't get something that they hoped would make them happy. But there's a completely spiritual realm where everything that exists in the material realm also exists in its original pure spiritual form, with Krishna as the central object of love and devotion. So Srila Madhavendra Puri was on the highest spiritual platform, and his lamentation was spiritual. He was lamenting in the mood of separation from Krishna, actually in the mood of Srimati Radharani, in separation from Krishna, that I could not attain Mathura, means I could not attain Krishna. But Ramachandra Puri, being very much in the bodily concept of life, misunderstood his spiritual master, thought that he was lamenting like an ordinary conditioned soul, and advised him to be fixed in Brahman. Brahman is, it's like the beginning of spiritual, but without variegatedness. So there, it's sort of like a marginal, or just beginning realization of the Absolute Truth. So to make such a mistake is bad enough in itself, but to make matters worse, Ramachandra Puri was so audacious that he dared to instruct his spiritual master, which was a great offense. Text 22. Shuni Mada Vendramane Krodha Upajila Dura Dura Papishta Bali Bartsana Karila. Hearing this instruction, what was the instruction? Yeah, not to lament, but to be fixed in Brahman. Hearing this instruction, Madhavendra Puri, greatly angry, rebuked him by saying, "Get out, you sinful rascal." Purport by Srila Prabhupada. Ramachandra Puri could not understand that his spiritual master, Madhavendra Puri, was feeling transcendental separation. His lamentation was not material. Rather, it proceeded from the highest stage of ecstatic love of Krishna. When he was crying in separation, "I could not achieve Krishna, I could not reach Mathura," this was not ordinary material lamentation. Ramachandra Puri was not sufficiently expert to understand the feelings of Madhavendra Puri. But nevertheless, he thought himself very advanced. Therefore, regarding Madhavendra Puri's expressions as ordinary material lamentation, he advised him to remember Brahman because he was latently an impersonalist. Madhavendra Puri understood Ramachandra Puri's position as a great fool, and therefore immediately rebuked him. Such a reprimand from the spiritual master is certainly for the betterment of the disciple. Now, this response of Madhavendra Puri is a further exhibition of transcendental emotion, of a different kind, anger. The verse says, Krodha, that's again the Bhagavad Gita, it's like something to avoid, one of the gateways to hell, Krodha. But here, Krodha Upajila, anger arose in Madhavendra Puri. But it was not material anger, it was spiritual anger. In the material world, anger arises as a result of frustrated desire. In fact, there's a word for anger in Sanskrit, which is kama anuja, which means like the younger brother of lust. Like Ramanuja, it's a name for Lakshman, the younger brother of Ramachandra. So Kamanuja is anger, which is the younger brother of lust. Because wherever lust goes, anger follows. And therefore lust and anger are to be avoided. But there's also a spiritual counterpart to lust and anger. Jai Shri Shri Radha Gokulananda ki jai Shri Shri Sitaram Lakshman Hanuman ki jai Shri Shri Gaura Nithai ki jai Shri Prabhupada ki jai. So, in the material realm, we desire something for our sense gratification, and when we don't get it, we become angry. Now, in the spiritual realm, we desire Krishna's service or Krishna's pleasure. And when there's some obstacle to Krishna's service or Krishna's pleasure, we become angry, not for ourselves, but for Krishna. And that anger can be used in Krishna's service to remove the obstacle to Krishna's pleasure. And the obstacle may be external, or it could be internal. Like in this case, Ramachandra Puri had some, you could say, misconceptions within his heart, which were an obstacle to his pleasing Krishna, pleasing his spiritual master and pleasing Krishna. And so Madhavendra Puri exhibited transcendental anger to remove that obstacle to Krishna's pleasure. I will tell a story that illustrates transcendental anger. It is a very interesting story, so even though it may take a few minutes, I think you will find it worthwhile. But in 1971, in November of 1971, the devotees organized the first Delhi Pandal. And as you may know, at the first Delhi Pandal, these most beautiful deities, Shri Shri Radha Gokulananda, their service was first manifest. Yamuna Devi was the head pujari, and it was a major attraction. And every day, probably, 30,000-40,000 people would come throughout the day. And for Srila Prabhupada's lecture in the evening, there were probably 20,000 people in the pandal. So one evening, a young man, from the appearance, he was like a hooligan or like a biker. Anyway, he had like this leather vest, and he was actually wearing chains, and he was quite muscular. He had tattoos and long, wild hair. And when Prabhupada was speaking, this young man came forward to the edge of the stage, and the devotees were just about to deal with him, when Srila Prabhupada said, "Let him come." So they let him come on the stage. Then Prabhupada said, "Give him asan." So they gave him a cushion to sit on. And then Prabhupada said, "Give him microphone." They gave him a microphone. And then he began his challenging of Srila Prabhupada. And he asked one question: "How old is the Bhagavad Gita?" Prabhupada said, 5,000 years. And the man said, "Well, according to my information," and he started going on his conception of the dating of the Bhagavad Gita. Prabhupada said, "That's nonsense." So then, you know, then the boy asked, you know, another type of challenging question: "Have you realized yourself within yourself?" Prabhupada said, "Yes." And, well, he didn't know what to do with that. And so he asked, I forget what it was. Anyway, another challenging question, very, very challenging question. And Srila Prabhupada said, "No, first you answer my question. What is the process for understanding the Bhagavad Gita?" And the young man said, "No, I asked you first." And Prabhupada said, "I'm not your servant. I don't have to answer your question. You answer my question. What is the process for understanding the Bhagavad Gita?" So it became quite a big argument on the stage. And the young man was getting like really angry and agitated that Prabhupada wasn't complying with his wishes. And then Prabhupada indicated, okay. So some of the stronger devotees came, picked up the hooligan, took him to the edge of the stage and dropped him back in the audience. Now this whole drama was actually staged by Srila Prabhupada for a reason. And that is that he wanted to bring up the question, what is the process for understanding the Bhagavad Gita? And to do so, he used the young man as an example of how not to understand the Bhagavad Gita. You know, you don't understand the Bhagavad Gita by challenging the authority on the Bhagavad Gita. But in the audience, there were two very different types of reactions. The more, you could say, intelligent ones, or the more submissive ones, they were glued to their seats, wanting to hear what Srila Prabhupada had to say about what is the process for understanding the Bhagavad Gita. And the other group, they thought that Prabhupada wasn't acting like a saintly person. So they got up out of their seats and they were like looking for someone to complain to. And so at that stage, I was in the audience distributing books. So like all these people were like surrounding me and like criticizing Srila Prabhupada. And there were a few other book distributors, they were experiencing the same thing. So we all tried to make our way to the safety of the stage area. Now, meanwhile, there were some political leaders who had come forward to support the Pandal program. You know, they helped in different ways, and they were always at the Pandal. And, you know, sometimes they'd get up on stage and make announcements. And one of the devotees told Srila Prabhupada that, you know, these politicians, you know, they're just trying to use this situation to increase their own popularity. It's like, you know, hundreds of thousands of pious Hindus are coming, so they want to, like, position themselves as, you know, supporters of Hindu Dharma. And Srila Prabhupada said, that's all right. If someone benefits by taking advantage of us and we don't lose, then we don't mind. But what happened is that when Srila Prabhupada staged this dramatic exhibition of how you don't understand the Bhagavad Gita, and the audience became polarized, so these politicians started calculating, you know, we identified ourselves with Swamiji, and now Swamiji's become controversial. This isn't good for our political prospects. So, as I mentioned, there was a group of us like around the stage, toward the back of the stage, because we didn't want to get in the way of Prabhupada's talk. And one of these politicians, he was so agitated, he said to Malati, Mataji, your Guru Maharaj has spoiled everything. Like, you get the idea. And Malati Dasi replied, my Guru Maharaj has not spoiled anything. And she took her hand and slapped him on the cheek. Slapped him on the face. And I was very impressed. I mean, I was a relatively new devotee, but I was very impressed because I could see that this was a spontaneous, natural, spiritual reaction. And, yeah. Krodha upajila. Anger arose. But it was for Krishna, for Krishna's devotee. So, a pure devotee is not easy to understand for a conditioned soul. And therefore, it's said that it's very difficult to understand the mind and activities of a pure devotee. But here, Ramachandra Puri, he had already accepted Madhavendra Puri as a spiritual master, and he was completely misunderstanding him and trying to take the position of a superior. That's what he was doing. He was taking the position of a superior and trying to instruct him, which was a great offense. And therefore, Madhavendra Puri said, dura, dura, patishta, papishta, get out, you sinful rascal. Then Madhavendra Puri prayed to Lord Krishna. O my Lord Krishna, I could not reach you, nor could I reach your abode, Mathura. I'm dying in my unhappiness, and now this rascal has come to give me more pain. Then he again turned his attention to Ramachandra Puri. Don't show your face to me. Go anywhere else you like. If I die seeing your face, I shall not achieve the destination of my life. Now this also reminds me of an exchange with Srila Prabhupada. Srila Prabhupada had a personal servant who was somehow having difficulty with Krishna consciousness, and he eventually left the Association of Devotees. And then, maybe a year later, when Srila Prabhupada was visiting, I believe, Laguna Beach, that devotee came to see Srila Prabhupada. And he told Srila Prabhupada that, you know, I never could really accept Krishna consciousness. I mean, in his own way, he was finding fault with Krishna consciousness, with the process, with the devotees, with everything. He said, so I left. And Prabhupada replied, good. I'm glad you left, because now I don't have to look at your morose face. Now, I must confess that when I first heard this, it wasn't as easy for me to appreciate as Malati's slapping the politician. Although I had a vague idea of why Prabhupada said that, but it took me a little time to sort of assess the whole situation and understand it on a deeper level. But first, you know, yeyatam mam prapadyante, you know, as one surrenders to Krishna, Krishna reciprocates accordingly. And I think that principle is the basis of Srila Prabhupada's frequently using words like fool and rascal, like the scientists. In effect, what the scientists are saying about us is that we're fools and rascals, because we believe in God, we don't believe in science, we don't believe in evolution, we don't believe in Big Bang or whatever. So, I mean, they may use different language, but in effect, they're basically saying that we're fools. And now they're like, I call them professional atheists who make a living out of being atheists. And they're, you know, one of them, I think he was a scientist, wrote a book called The God Delusion. So basically they're saying that any theist, and what to speak of a Hare Krishna devotee, is a fool. And so Prabhupada, it's sort of like tit for tat, as a preacher. Now this is, we're talking about the preaching realm. So they're saying we're fools, so Prabhupada's saying they're fools. Because even though personally we could tolerate any insult that's not a problem for a devotee. He's not, you know, impelled by false ego. But when people challenge us, we have to meet the challenge. Otherwise, they'll think that we have no answers. It happened sometime. I remember once in Bombay, someone was challenging me. You know, I went to meet someone in his office and try to enroll him as a life member, and he was just like challenging very atheistic ideas. And, you know, it wasn't too long before I realized, you know, he's not going to become a life member. He's not even going to buy any books. He won't even give a donation. I'm just wasting my time with him. But then I thought, if I made some excuse to leave, he'll think that he won the argument. He'll think that his arguments were superior and we had no answers, and so we left. So I had to stay and, you know, argue with him until the end, so that he didn't think that we have no substance and you know, no ground to stand on. So, and of course, Krishna also uses this language, you know, namam duskritina mudha. Anyone who doesn't surrender to Krishna's miscreant, fool, rascal, demon. So, you know, that's there. But with Prabhupada's disciple, that disciple was more or less saying, you know, I didn't really like being with you all, so I left. And Prabhupada said, well, good, I'm glad you left, because we didn't like being with you. It's just like, you know, it doesn't mean that within his heart Prabhupada was actually glad he left. I mean, Prabhupada would like everyone to become a purified servant of Krishna, but when you preach, you meet opposing elements and you have to meet them in an appropriate way. In fact, of course, this may be more in the managerial realm, but Srila Prabhupada instructed one devotee in Juhu that you should be so expert that after people deal with us, is like, I think, talking about like business people who might try to cheat us, that after people deal with us, they go and tell their friends, these Hare Krishnas may look like fools, but actually they're very intelligent. Don't mess with them. So this is personalism. It's very different from impersonalism. Personalism means you do everything for Krishna. You don't reject anything, but you accept everything that can be used in Krishna's service and use it in Krishna's service. So, don't show your face to me. Go anywhere else you like. If I die seeing your face, I shall not achieve the destination of my life. I'm dying without achieving the shelter of Krishna, and therefore I'm greatly unhappy. And now this condemned foolish rascal has come to instruct me about Brahman. Now, we read what happened next to Ramachandra Puri. And this is very instructive, and it should really serve as a warning to all of us of the consequences of committing offenses. Ramachandra Puri was thus denounced by Madhavendra Puri. due to his offense, gradually material desire appeared within him. Purport by Srila Prabhupada. The word vasana, material desires, refers to dry speculative knowledge. Such speculative knowledge is only material. As confirmed in Srimad Bhagavatam 10.14.4, a person without devotional service who simply wants to know things, like the gyanis, they want knowledge, 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 knowledge. A person without devotional service who simply wants to know things, kevala bodha labhyate, gains only dry speculative knowledge but no spiritual profit. This is also confirmed in the Bhakti Sandarbha 1.11, wherein it is said, Jivan mukta api purnar yanti samsara vasanam yad yachintya mahashakto bhagavat aparadinaha. What is the meaning of aparad? Offense. Even though one is liberated in this life, if one offends the Supreme Personality of Godhead, he falls down in the midst of material desires, of which dry speculation about spiritual realization is one. So this is a general reaction to offenses, that one develops material desires, or one becomes filled with material desires. And sometimes as devotees, we experience that we may join, we may feel that we're, uninterested in material things. But then later, we may find that we are becoming more inclined materially. I actually just got a letter from a devotee saying, like, she felt she had, like, sunk so low to compared to where she was before. And, like, she's really, like, asking for help because she didn't want to be like that. She felt she's not fit to be called a disciple of her exalted spiritual master, not me. And so it can happen. And of course, one cause is just spiritual slackness. We become slack in our spiritual practices. And so we go down, we lose our enthusiasm for devotional service. And we can't be void. We can't be empty. So if we don't have enthusiasm for Krishna consciousness, we're going to get enthusiastic for something else, which is not Krishna consciousness. So, in other words, we should be very careful about slackness, and even more damaging than just slackness is offenses. And Srila Prabhupada quotes two other verses that make the same point. And he concludes, these are references from authoritative revealed scriptures. If one becomes an offender to his spiritual master, or the Supreme Personality of Godhead, he falls down to the material platform to merely speculate. Text 27. One who is attached to dry speculative knowledge has no relationship with Krishna. His occupation is criticizing Vaishnavas. Thus, he is situated in criticism. So, This is the negative example. Now, we come to the positive example. Text 28. Ishwara Puri, the spiritual master of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, performed service to Madhavendra Puri, cleaning up his stool and urine with his own hand. You can see the contrast. Ramachandra Puri was so proud that he thought that he could instruct his spiritual master. And Ishwara Puri was so humble that he was willing to clean up his spiritual master's stool and urine. So the one who was very proud, he was actually fallen. And the one who was very humble, he was actually exalted. Ishwara Puri was always chanting the holy name and pastimes of Lord Krishna for Madhavendra Puri to hear. In this way, he helped Madhavendra Puri remember the holy name and pastimes of Lord Krishna at the time of death. So from Ishwara Puri's example, we can also learn how to serve a devotee who is approaching the time of death. On one level, we can serve the devotee physically by attending to all of the person's physical needs. And spiritually, we speak about Krishna, chant the holy name of Krishna to help them remember Krishna at the time of death. And this is a very important service. In fact, for this service, Ishwara Puri was so greatly recognized by Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu that he accepted him as his spiritual master. And what was his qualification? He cleaned up the stool and urine of his spiritual master. And he spoke about Krishna and sang about Krishna to make it easier for his spiritual master to remember Krishna at the time of death. Pleased with Ishwara Puri, Madhavendra Puri embraced him and gave him the benediction that he would become a great devotee and lover of Krishna. Now, I had a personal experience that was sort of a material counterpart to Ishwara Puri's service to Madhavendra Puri, but it does have some lessons to it, so I will tell you. At a certain stage, my father he got a stroke, and then it was revealed that he had cancer, and so he was admitted into a hospital in the Chicago area. And, you know, within the family, we felt someone should always be with him. And, you know, my sister was married. She had a small son. And so it seemed like I should be the one. So there was a little sofa in the hospital room. And so the idea is I would take rest there at night. But my father was very weak and, you know, in quite some distress. And every so often he would have to get up to go to the bathroom. And I would have to help him because he was so weak he couldn't walk on his own. So I was in a constant state of alert. I thought he might need me at any moment. And yeah, so it was very hard to sleep. And even if I did doze off, I'd hear a sound and I'd think maybe he needs me. And a lot of the time he did. So this went on for a few days and it was like very hard physically and emotionally. I was struggling, but I did it. So this one day, it was like the worst night, I guess you could say. My father, it was, I could hear some sound that he needed to be helped out of bed to go to the bathroom. And so I'd get up and help him. But a lot of the time, he didn't make it to the bathroom in time. So there was like stool and urine on the floor of the hospital room, which I would clean up. So around dawn, I could just see the first rays of the sun coming through the curtains or the shades. My father said to me, what would you do if I gave you $1 million? And, you know, I mean, I was just, you know, serving him because it was my duty. And I didn't want to suffer more. But he said like that, you know. And within my mind, well, anyway, I won't tell you what was in my mind yet. So then, you know, in due course, you know, the cancer took over. And at that time, His Holiness Radhanath Swami was visiting Chicago and was with his father. And so he was going to come and visit me at home. Then we took my father out of the hospital, and then he just spent the rest of his time at home. And then eventually he came maybe 3 days after my father left. So I related this incident to His Holiness Radhanath Swami from the hospital. And he said that it's just like Ishwara Puri serving Madhavendra Puri. And of course, Madhavendra Puri gave Ishwara Puri the great treasure that he had, which was love of God. In fact, in the Bengali it says Premadan, the great treasure of love of God. And your father, he didn't have that treasure, but still he wanted to give you the treasure that he did have, which was like a material treasure. And it was the same dynamic. It was the same dynamic. And at that time, I actually had the same thought, but I didn't want to say anything. But then when His Holiness Radhanath Swami said it, I thought, well, he also had the same thought. So when we take care of dying people, and probably... Oh, everyone, please switch off your cell phones. We are taking off here. And when we land, we'll let you know that you can turn your phones on again. So when we take care of someone at the end of life, we get blessings. We definitely get blessings. And what form the blessing takes may vary according to the person, but we definitely get blessings. So it's a very sacred service, and it's an opportunity that we should take advantage of. I wouldn't say welcome, but it is an opportunity that we should avail of. And it's actually good for us, because it will help us to come out of the bodily concept. I mean, in the nursing field, or probably any medical field, some people have this calling to take care of people at the time of death. And other people, they can't deal with it. You know, when we were beginning our hospice in Vrindavan, we got a nurse. She was a devotee. She's actually a devotee from Bhaktivedanta Hospital in Mumbai. But she was used to taking care of people who were recovering, you know, who were getting cured and getting better. So that, like, made her happy. And coming to a situation where, from a certain perspective, everyone was, like, you know, succumbing to death, she couldn't take it. And I'm not saying it as a, it's just a fact, you know, she just couldn't take it. So it may be something like a calling, you know, some people might have, some people might not have. But it really is a wonderful opportunity for service. And it's interesting that in Santa Barbara, there was a rabbi who had just come to a big temple in Santa Barbara, and he had been a rabbi at a smaller place where the people were maybe more. Anyway, they were more focused on study and prayer than in the big temple. So he, you know, he confided in me that he felt a little drained, you know, at the new temple. Of course, now it's different. He's there, he's happy, the temple's flourishing, he's flourishing. But at that particular early stage. And so I asked him, you know, well, what gives you energy and what drains your energy? So he mentioned some of the things that drained his energy. And there weren't that, at that stage, there weren't that many things that gave him energy. And he said, this might be surprising to you, but one thing that gives me energy is actually ministering to congregants who are leaving their bodies, or who are dying. Yeah, that's a good point. That's a good point. I'm my own worst enemy. Oh, this one's already off. One devotee told me he was in the courtroom. This is a true story, just maybe 6 months ago. And the judge, you know, came in and sat down and announced that, you know, turn off your cell phones. And if anyone's cell phone rings, I'm going to fine you $50. 2 minutes later, her cell phone rang. And everyone cracked up. He said, okay, I'm going to give $50 to my favorite charity, but no cell phones. Like she had but thank you for that. So now coming back to end of life. So the rabbi was saying that this might come as a surprise, but I actually get energy, means like devotional energy, from ministering to patients at the end of life. And it's that process does sort of bring you into a sacred space. And, you know, if you can enter that and be with that soul as it struggles either to stay in the body or to leave the body, it's usually like, it's a very, but it can really elevate your consciousness. Confirmed. So, now we return to Chaitanya Charitamrita. So, text 31. Thus, Ishwara Puri became like an ocean of ecstatic love for Krishna. Whereas Ramachandra Puri became a dry speculator and a critic of everyone else. Ishwara Puri received the blessing of Madhavendra Puri, whereas Ramachandra Puri received a rebuke from him. Therefore, these two persons, Ishwara Puri and Ramachandra Puri, are examples of the objects of a great personality's benediction and punishment. Madhavendra Puri instructed the entire world by presenting these two examples. So, yesterday in our seminar, we discussed some of the items that are favorable for devotional service and some of the items that are unfavorable. And one of the items that is unfavorable is prajalpa. This is from the Nectar of Instruction, Upadeshamrita. So sadbhi bhakti vinashyati. There are six items that destroy devotional service, and one is prajalpa. And there are different categories of prajalpa. But the one that is discussed the most by Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur in his series of essays called Bhaktiloka, in which he discusses these two verses, Sadbhi Bhakti Vinashyati and Sadbhi Bhakti Prasidyati, six items that make one's devotional service successful and six items that spoil one's efforts. So one of the categories of prajalpa is talking about others. And he says that one should not talk about others. And he's very emphatic. There's one line he says, if you do have to talk about others, better remain silent. In other words, no exceptions. But then he does give an exception. And the exception is, there are actually a couple of exceptions, but the exception is that a guru or teacher, when instructing his disciples or students, may have to give a negative example to make the point clear. And without giving the negative example, it may not be clear just by giving the positive example. So here we find that principle in Chaitanya Charitamrita. We have the positive example of Ishwara Puri and the negative example of Ramachandra Puri. And there is no fault in discussing others if required to make a point clear in terms of spiritual principles. But Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur also gives a condition for speaking about others. And the condition is that when speaking about others, one should not be influenced by devotional impediments such as envy, pride, hatred, or distinction, the desire for distinction. So, as a rule, we should not talk about others. And the fact that sometimes we have to give a negative example doesn't mean that, okay, there's the loophole I was looking for. And boy, I have a lot of negative examples to share with people, just so they get the point that you shouldn't be like. Because if you do that out of envy, and we're in the material world out of envy, or pride, or reputation, like we want to show we're better than the others by pointing out their faults, or hatred. You know, I hate that person, I'm going to get that person. Then we should not do it. We should just remain silent. Or talk about Krishna, glorify Krishna and the pure devotees of Krishna. But here's an example of Srila Krishna Das Kaviraj Goswami, most exalted Vaishnav, giving us both the positive example and the negative example. So that it's very clear, and he's made it very clear, what are the consequences of pleasing a great soul, and what are the consequences of offending a great soul. And it's very clear. One became a great lover of Krishna, and the other became a materialistic speculator and fault finder. So now we come to the verse. We don't have so much time, so I don't think that we will chant it responsively, although it's a beautiful verse. But I will read about the verse, and we'll see just how fortunate we are. Text 33. Jagat Guru Madhavendra Kari Premadana E Shloka Padi Tenho Kaila Antardana. His divine grace, Madhavendra Puri, the spiritual master of the entire world, thus distributed ecstatic love for Krishna. While passing away from the material world, he chanted the following verse. Ayi Dina Dayardra Natha He Mathura Natha Kadava Lok Yase Hridayam Tvad Aloka Kataram Daite Brahmyati Kim Karom Yaham. O my Lord, O most merciful Master, O Master of Mathura, when shall I see you again? Because of my not seeing you, my agitated heart has become unsteady. O most beloved one, what shall I do now? Text 35. In this verse, Madhavendra Puri instructs how to achieve ecstatic love for Krishna. By feeling separation from Krishna, one becomes spiritually situated. So this verse, and I'll read one more from Chaitanya Charitamrita, text 36. Madhavendra Puri sowed the seed of ecstatic love for Krishna within this material world and then departed. That seed later became a great tree in the form of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. I have incidentally described the passing away of Madhavendra Puri. Anyone who hears this must be considered very fortunate. So in this verse, Srila Madhavendra Puri expresses feelings of separation from Krishna very much in the mood of Srimati Radharani. In fact, it is said elsewhere in Chaitanya Charitamrita that only three people could understand the deep purport or the full import of this verse. One, Srila Madhavendra Puri. Two, Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. And three, Srimati Radharani. No fourth person could know the full import of this verse. But still, we can understand the value of feelings of separation, that by such feelings of separation, one becomes transcendentally situated. And this is a very central teaching. It was a seed that Madhavendra Puri left. That seed became a great tree with Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. And he manifested the mood of separation, and his next followers, the six Goswamis, they manifested the mood of separation, and their followers. And so this is a very a crucial way to make spiritual advancement. And the underlying psychology of separation is humility. That one feels that one is separated because of one's own disqualification. That, you know, because I'm so fallen, I'm so lowly, I'm so wretched, I could not attain Krishna, I could not attain Mathura, I could not attain the goal of my life. And that humility is the basis of everything. Trinada Pisuji Chena Tarara Pisuhishna. Even in our dealings with each other, that humility and tolerance, that will make us free from offenses. The grass is so humble, people step on the grass never protests. The tree is so tolerant that sometimes torrential rain comes, scorching heat, it could be snow, animals can come and pass urine and stool, but the tree tolerates. And not only does it tolerate, but it continues to render service. It continues to give shade and shelter. It continues to give fruits and flowers. It doesn't stop its service. So we should aspire for that mood. We should work for that mood. That if someone insults us or defames us, we should tolerate and continue to give service. Sometimes our own minds give us trouble. We have to tolerate and continue to give service. And then Krishna will be pleased, and then Kirtaniya Sadahari, then we'll be able to chant constantly, no interruption caused by false ego. This tendency to defend ourselves, it's like eating, sleeping, mating, and defending. I mean, if it's a matter of Krishna or our spiritual master, another Vaishnava, then we must defend them. But for ourselves, why should we defend ourselves? Just depend on Krishna. Because that, and chant, Kirtaniya Sadahari, take shelter of the holy name. And of course, we're also incredibly blessed because that we have two kinds of kirtan. We have Nam Sankirtan, chanting japa, chanting kirtan in the temple, chanting Harinam Sankirtan in the streets. And we also have book distribution. And these activities are also very potent. They have great potency to please Srila Prabhupada, please the disciplic succession, and help us to get their mercy. And it's only by their mercy that we can make any progress. So, And once Rameshwar, he compared distributing books to the mood of the gopis. The mood of the gopis is to bring people to Krishna. You know, the gopis don't want to enjoy directly with Krishna themselves personally, but they want to arrange for others to be with Krishna. So Rameshwar, he compared the mood of the book distributor, that he's bringing others to Krishna. or she's bringing others to Krishna by giving them the book, which is Krishna. And but then, you know, some other devotee thought, you know, is this right? Is this some speculation? And so the other devotee asked Srila Prabhupada, and Srila Prabhupada confirmed that, yes, it is correct. So somehow or other, through Krishna Lila or Chaitanya Lila, we've been brought in touch with the most sublime reality. And we can enter into that reality just by following the process that Srila Prabhupada gave us. Well, Srila Prabhupada gave us, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu gave us, Rupa Goswami gave us. Rupa Goswami says that 5 items of devotional service, sadhu sangha, nama kirtana, bhagavat shravana, mathura vasa, and murti sharanvita, sevita. These 5 items, sadhu sangha, associating with advanced devotees, nama kirtana, chanting the holy name, bhagavat shravanam, hearing Srimad Bhagavatam and Bhagavad Gita, mathura vasa, living in Mathura, Vrindavan, Mayapur, or the temple, and worshipping the deity with faith and veneration, that these 5 items are so potent that even by a little association with any one of them, one can awaken ecstatic love for Krishna. But there's one condition, and that is that we should be offenseless. And so that's why we have these examples and these discussions, to become offenseless. Because if we're offenseless, there's so much potency in everything that we do that we'll feel great results, which we all want for ourselves and for others. And from my own experience, some direct experience and some indirect by hearing from others, I've seen how much mercy devotees get at the time of death. I mean, some devotees, it's just amazing. Even ones that have had difficulty along the way, maybe weren't so steady throughout, but they, you know, as long as they remain faithful to Srila Prabhupada and his instructions and you know, don't become offensive, they get tremendous benefit. Even relatives of devotees, even parents of devotees, who may not even be devotees themselves, even they get tremendous benefit by their connection with a son or daughter or brother or sister who's connected with Srila Prabhupada and Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. So we should have no doubts. We should really surrender ourselves fully to the process, and we'll relish here and now, and even more so in the future. Hare Krishna. So Shruti Dharma Prabhu has given us until 10:30. That is 7 minutes. What did I say? Yes, 9:30. I don't know why I said 10:30. I knew it was 9:30. So, Maharaj Dhananjaya, yes?
Is it possible?
Yes.
Do you know, did Prabhupada make any comments on the morality of the Dalai Lama?
Did he make any comment on
what morality did?
I don't know if it came to his attention. But, you know, I often quote his statement to his godbrothers about her, that, well, the conclusion was that, you know, she would slit her throat for me, and I would do the same for her. So. Hare Krishna. Yes, Maharaj. That's a different one. But yes, I can say, and I think this is very important, that after that meeting, and there were other meetings with gentlemen who are generally Mayavadis. In India, you don't get so many regular atheists, but you get a lot of Mayavadis. And even though it was very painful to argue with them, and even though it could take a lot of time, but usually the next morning, I would feel mercy that, yeah, maybe Prabhupada was pleased, and the next morning I feel some mercy, even though at the time it was, you know, painful to argue with them. And you know there's not going to be any real conclusion, but you just have to. You have to. Yeah. You want me to tell that story? Huh? Yeah. Do you know it? Or you just want to hear it for the first time? Okay. Well, if I tell the whole story, it might go a little past 9:30, but I'll tell Shruti Dharma Prabhu that I was following superior orders. So I was in Madras, and in Madras there are a lot of Mayavadis, and they fancy themselves as intellectuals. And there's also a tradition, Prabhupada mentions it in Krishna book. There's also a tradition of, you know, Shaivites and Vaishnavites arguing, like, who's supreme. But these sort of, you know, false intellectuals, they think, oh, how childish, you know, fighting Krishna supreme or Shiva supreme, you know, it's all one and there's no use. So what happened is that I was preaching the way I heard Srila Prabhupada preach, and I kept meeting people who they didn't like the preaching. And they didn't usually say it to my face, but there was like an undercurrent of protest in certain circles in Madras. And even like a very good friend of mine, I stayed at his house, a very pious man, even he said, you know, don't criticize others. Just state positively what you want about your philosophy and your activities, but don't criticize others. It's sort of like on that subject of criticism. And and then there was another man, he was also a very good supporter of ours. He said more or less the same thing. So I started thinking, you know, so many people are saying the same thing. Maybe I am doing something wrong. You know, maybe Krishna's trying to tell me something. So I had an appointment with an industrialist, and I decided, okay, I'm not gonna criticize. I'm not gonna say anything about anyone else. I'll just speak positively about our philosophy and activities. So I did it in this man's office, and he, you know, he listened to everything, and then he said, what about Shankaracharya? You've said so many things, you haven't said anything about Shankaracharya. He's one of the great acharyas of India. I said, yes, he is. And I just left it at that. He said, well, but what about him? Why haven't you said anything about him? I said, yeah, he's also one of the great spiritual leaders of India. And so he kept pressing me, you know, pressing. And finally I realized I'm not going to get out of this. I can't. I just can't. He won't let me. So then I brought out the whole thing that Shankaracharya was an incarnation of Shiva, and he taught a veiled form of Buddhism, which was atheism. And I even took out, in those days we didn't have Chaitanya Charitamrita. I mean, you all are so fortunate to have all these books. We didn't have Chaitanya Charitamrita until much later. But we had the teachings of Lord Chaitanya, so I took it out and I showed him, you know, the whole history of Lord Shiva and what Shankaracharya was really trying to achieve, and I just said it all. So then, that was the end of it. I thought, well, that's the end of this. You know, I put away all my pictures. Incidentally, the life membership room here at Bhaktivedanta Manor, it was like the first like real guest room we had in the West. So we had like a nice picture of it with a nice bed and bedspread and nice furniture. So that was like part of our preaching kit for making life members. So yeah, so we had a few pictures like that in Rathiatra, and yeah, so we showed him all the... So anyway, so packed away all the books, packed away all the pictures, took back the life membership form, and said, oh, this happened again. So as I was... He had a big compound, and he had his office and his industry and his residence all in the same compound. So as I was nearing the gate, he said, before you leave, I want to show you my temple. So I thought, oh no, he's going to have a Shiva Linga. He's going to want me to offer full obeisances. If I don't offer obeisances, he's going to think I'm sectarian or ignorant. And so I looked at him like, do I really have to do this? And he looked back. Yes, you do. So I went inside the house, and he took me to his temple room. It was like quite a big room. It was, I mean, as a house temple goes, it was maybe half the size of the deity room, with like all white marble or some tile, white tiles. And there was a big altar, like a platform, maybe like this high. And on the platform were these big marble deities of Radha and Krishna. I couldn't believe it. I hadn't seen Radha and Krishna the whole time in Madras. Almost all the Vaishnava temples there were Vishnu. And there's one near the ocean, Parthasarathi, just Krishna alone, with a mustache. So, yeah. And so I was like so happy to see Radha and Krishna. I like offered obeisances, and then I looked at him like, what's happening? And then he explained that me and my entire family and all of my ancestors for many generations have been devotees of Radha and Krishna. And I was just testing you. And I'm very pleased you did not compromise. And I'll be very happy to become your life member. Srila Prabhupada ki jai. So he went back to his office. It was like the reverse. Took out all the books, took out the magazine, gave him the form, filled in the form, gave a check for the whole amount at one go, and I thought, well, maybe I'm not doing the wrong thing. But I wasn't completely sure because I'd heard it from so many people. So then I got back to the place where I was staying, and there was a letter from Srila Prabhupada, an aerogram. And, you know, I looked at it, and it's like the words just jumped out of the page. Because I'd written him about my challenges in Madras. And he wrote back that that my Guru Maharaj never compromised, and I will never compromise in my preaching. And similarly, none of my disciples should ever compromise in their preaching. And we must declare it boldly. Oh yes, he said, I'm the only one in India who's criticizing not only impersonalism and demigod worship, but anything that falls short of complete surrender to Krishna as the Supreme Godhead. And then he said, we must declare it boldly that Krishna is the Supreme Personality of Godhead and all others are his servants. And unless people, you know, surrender to Krishna as the Supreme Godhead, they should not dream of, you know, peace or prosperity. So then when I saw that, I thought, okay, then this is the right thing. So it brings us, in a way, back to that point of criticism that Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur said we shouldn't speak about others. But you can speak about others if it's to make clear a point. And Srila Prabhupada did it. He did it. And Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur gives three different types of cases of justified criticism. One is you speak about a general category without just a general category. Like Shukadeva Goswami speaks about envious householders who spend their days making money and spending money, and you know. Then there's criticizing someone but without mentioning their name. Like sometimes Srila Prabhupada would do it. It's in the scripture also that they're talking about a particular person, but they're not mentioning the name of the person. But if you know, you could recognize the person, and other people, they won't know who the person is. And in some cases, you can even mention the person, the name of the person, if it's necessary for instruction. Yes. One example is King Vena. He's mentioned by name, and he's really described in very, you know, I shouldn't say in a bad way, he was a bad person. And he was, like Prabhupada said, to call a thief is not So he was, yeah, so our acharyas do that. But not unnecessarily. That's what makes something prajalpa or not prajalpa. If it's unnecessary, it's prajalpa. But if it's necessary for a good reason and you're doing it with a clean heart, then you're following the faultless path of the previous acharyas and mahajans. So, but even this, I remember once Srila Prabhupada told us on a morning walk, it is a great art to criticize. And then he said, unfortunately, you do not know that art. So we should, yeah. So if necessary, we can, but we should know, we should do it with the proper mood and in the right way. And then it will be faultless and sinless, and it will actually be very enlivening and enlightening. Okay, last.
which verse was Srila Goswami wrote on the palm leaves? Lord Chaitanya was impressed. He said, how do you understand?
Oh, yes. Yes, I thought that might have been in your mind. No. At Rathiatra, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was in the mood of separation of Radharani when she met Krishna at Kurukshetra at the time of the eclipse. It's like he was the same Krishna and she was the same Radha, but it was different because instead of being dressed as a cowherd boy, Krishna was dressed as a royal prince. And instead of the sound of chirping birds and peacocks, there's like the rattling of chariots and the pounding of horses' hoof prints. So she couldn't enjoy her relationship with Krishna. She couldn't exchange her loving mellows with Krishna in that atmosphere in Kurukshetra. So she wanted to bring Krishna back to Vrindavan. So Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, his mood at the Rathiatra was like Radharani's when she met Krishna at Kurukshetra and wanted to bring him back to Vrindavan. So Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was like pulling Krishna back to Vrindavan. So the Jagannath temple in Neelachal, that's a representation of Kurukshetra or Dwarka, and the Gundicha temple at Sundarachal is a representation of Vrindavan, so he's bringing Krishna to Vrindavan. So he was singing, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was singing like what seemed to be like a mundane love song about a young boy and girl who'd had a relationship in their youth, and then after a long time they're meeting again, but it's not the same because the situation is different. It seemed like a mundane sort of love song, and nobody could really understand it except for Swarup Damodar Goswami. But one year, by chance, Rupa Goswami was present. And he heard it, and then he wrote a verse of his own that explained the purport of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's song. And like you said, he just put it in the thatch of the roof of his hut, and he went to take bath in the ocean, and then Chaitanya Mahaprabhu came and saw that, and he said, Rupa Goswami, you know, has understood my innermost heart. How could he understand? And then Swarup Damodar Goswami said, he must have received your mercy. Otherwise, without receiving your mercy, he could not have done it. So, that. So that was what you had in mind. Yeah, this one is, yeah. Yeah, they're both the mood of separation, very confidential feelings of separation. And we are, that's what I'm saying, like we're so fortunate that these most confidential, esoteric truths are being presented to us. It's like mind-boggling. And Srila Vishwanatha Chakravarti Thakur, he has raised this question, this paradox that we fallen souls in Kali Yuga are so fallen, and yet we're being given this most exalted love of Godhead that, you know, even great sages and demigods cannot approach. So how is it possible? So Vishwanatha Chakravarti Thakur gives the example of a king who gets intoxicated, and he goes into his treasury and he takes out the most precious jewels in his treasury, and he walks out onto the street and starts distributing these precious gems to the bums on the street. But they're his jewels. You know, he can do with them what he wants. So Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is so intoxicated with love of Krishna that he's taking out these most precious gems of ecstatic love for Krishna in the mood of the gopis, in the mood of separation of Radharani, and making them available to us bums on the street. Now we're not on the street anymore. So that is mercy. That is like inconceivable causeless mercy. And the medium, of course, for distributing that mercy to us is Srila Prabhupada. All right, thank you very much. All glories to Srila Prabhupada. Srila Prabhupada ki jai. Hare Krishna.